Welcome morning, people. It is the Starship Rokon Show with Anna DeVlance. It's all for another day. I'll broadcast, and since I want to congratulate everybody who was inducted into the WGN Walk of Fame today. And I got to say that the great surprise that I encountered today was meeting Roger Treemstra, who at the self-proclaimed age of 88 has decided that he is going to scream the truth about everything in his life.
I love that.
And I think, and I do love that too, because it is kind of that.
It's like, hey, I can do this now.
As he said to Bill and Wendy right after the thing, he was like, hey, what are they going to do, arrest me? And then he just told the truth about everything.
And he's sharp as a whip.
Oh, he is. Mm-hmm. Oh, he is, totally. He's married. He's got, he and his wife of 68 years or something like that.
Wow.
Have, I think, what did he say, 37?
Children,
people?
Grandchildren.
Children,
37
grandchildren
is a lot.
Children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Yeah. 12 great-grandchildren.
Wow.
Think about that. That is something right there.
Well, I haven't seen him in years, and I went up to him and said, hi, and he looked at me, and in front of everyone said, oh, are you pregnant?
What?
And
what?
Everyone rolled their eyes. And I, of course, said, no, this is hilarious, because I had all my pregnancies here at WGN, all my babies. And Roger would always, even afterward, be like, oh, my God, are you pregnant again?
Oh, so this was his. Oh, I got it.
I mean, it's been, what, years? And he, that's the first thing that came to his, mind. And
still
it's hilarious.
It.
Yeah. So I said, no, he's not being inappropriate at all.
Plus, we just talked about this on the air this week. Never, ever
Never
ask a woman
that.
If she's
pregnant. Yeah. Right? Well, isn't that kinda funny?
But sometimes, especially when, older people just say whatever's in their mind.
Absolutely.
They'll come up to somebody and go, God, you've gained weight or something. I mean, like, well, thank, nice to see you, But that was not what that was about. He was just making fun of the fact that, you were birthing children in the newsroom here.
Almost 30 years later, he remembered that. Yeah, are you pregnant?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Mine like a
so
steel
funny.
Trap.
I laughed. And then everyone else kind of laughed very uncomfortably.
Right, nervously.
She's okay.
Yes,
she's
exactly.
Fine.
Awesome.
Everyone backed away slowly.
Yeah. Okay.
I love that guy.
Crazy
Good
old man.
Luck.
But he was great. I loved
yes,
him.
Yes, he was.
I loved him. He was.
Didn't he wear a poncho by the end? Was he a little cold?
Oh, yeah. He had a Hawks poncho on.
Yep. He's like, where's the blankets? A little chilly out there.
It was interesting. I mean, it was a pretty fascinating thing. Dave Kaplan brought 60 people. I counted them. There were 60 people.
There were so many guys who looked like they worked for ESPN there.
Right.
They're all here for Cap, right?
Or that they played basketball.
Yes.
All like,
right. There were athletes and entertainers. And it
looked
like
the ESPY Awards.
It was a little
small group of ESPY Award people.
There's at least one guy had more buttons on his jacket than necessary.
And the shirt matches the socks.
I think that they were waiting for a red carpet. They're like, where's our photo up?
Yeah, it was fun though. He did. He brought all these people, and it was really
he did it right.
You know,
it was
that's
cool.
You can tell he's a passionate man, and he's beloved.
He is.
For his passion and love of Chicago sports, and specifically the Cubs. So it's pretty. It was pretty really 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 great. Really, it is an honor to be just associated with WGN. Period. But it's really an honor to be at that event.
It is. Well, it reminds you of, what a special place this radio station has in so many of our hearts. We've had an opportunity now to work with some of the people who have been inducted into this. But you think about over the years, the voices you've heard. Judy Pilak, Mary Vandevelde.
Yes.
David Kaplan I've worked with in different capacities. But over the years, you think about what an important part they played in our lives, or for generations. Together as a class.
Even Judy. Okay.
Thank you, Anna.
Mm-hmm.
So smart.
It was very
beautiful.
See? Gets you everywhere with Judy.
Yeah.
Judy, you're amazing.
I know what's important.
Right. Flattery is important.
Wait, some people were walking up and down and looking at all the plaques, and I was, of course,
and where did you direct
them,
Judy?
I was directing them to mine.
You should have actually put things over, like a planter or something, over the other plaques, and you're the only one there.
Yeah. Oh,
where are they?
Darn it.
All right. So we're going to count your money coming up here in just a moment. But first, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Then there's this. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago, 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
Here she is. Susie Sunshine, as she's known here. Susan Schmidt, as she's known over at PBM. Is joining
we don't talk
us
about them
now on the Super mind. Celebrity Hotline. I know
you like us better anyway, so that works out.
Of course, I do. Anna.
No, mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think she's. I think she thinks Cisco is a my former radio partner of 5 weeks. He's somehow better at doing this than we are. But okay, fine. We'll you know what?
We'll
it's
try
okay.
to get past that.
We'll try to work our way through. All right.
I think someone might be less prone to panic. I don't know, but.
Everybody
Ouch.
Is less prone to panic than I am.
Yep.
All right. Let's, okay.
This is true.
All right. Let's talk about where we are here, because this is an interesting. I was just reading about it's the end of the low interest rate period for mortgages and for low interest rates period. First of all, do you agree with that? And what kind of impact is that going to have on the economy as interest rates start to creep up?
Well, I think this is all relative. So we are seeing the interest rate curve start to move up, and that's no surprise. The Fed has been telegraphing that this has been the path, and this is going to continue to be the path for the last 3 years. So we have seen this, and we're starting to see it creep up. You know, it's interesting because this week is the first week where we've seen the 10-year yield on the 10-year Treasury hold above 3%. And so now we're finally crossing that 3% barrier where it looks like it's sticking. And that means that, yes, we are seeing a gradual increase in interest rates, but still our 10-year treasury is at 3% yield. In the grand scheme of things, when you go back over a multi-year period, that's still a pretty low interest rate. So if you talk to people who were getting mortgages in the 70s, 80s, even 90s, you know, those mortgages could have even been in double-digit ranges at, yeah. you know, 10, 12%. So to be able to, you know, base things off of that 3%, you know, 30-year mortgage is still coming in those, you know, low, mid-single digits in interest rates, that's pretty good.
Talk about the U.S.-China trade talks that are underway. The world's two largest economies are, you know, their representatives are meeting, and this is a big deal. What happens here? So far, we're hearing today the Trump economic advisor Larry Kudlow saying no deal yet, but they, meaning China, is meeting many of our demands.
Well, so far, now what's interesting about this is we had a big kerfuffle in the market. You know, everybody really that's a technical term, by the way. You really focused on this in the market when it first came out. Trade talks with China, there was a lot of concern, a lot of nervousness. And as we have seen this pattern evolve before, the market got really nervous up front. Talks have continued. There's been posturing on both sides. We're rolling through it. And it's really surprising because this week the market has basically ignored the back and forth and that chatter around trade talks and where they're and how they're developing. So I think the market is showing you that it's getting used to this rhetoric. We don't really know how it's going to impact things yet. But by the way the market's reacting, I think the market is realizing that perhaps, you know, the dire consequences are not as likely, and we're going to find some way to work through this and work it out. And I think we're feeling pretty good about how American companies are positioned.
Well, but you do have this interesting situation with ZTE. To me, that is fascinating because, you know, take all of the politics out of it and take all of the espionage and all the other things. You know, there is this concept of picking winners and losers that this administration, for being a Republican administration, it's kind of antithetical to at least the intellectual strain of American conservatism for the last half century, if not century, which is to be very laissez-faire, let the markets be the markets and don't get in their way, deregulate, which they're doing, but also don't pick winners and losers. And so the president turning around going, yeah, no, we're going to help out this one company here. Or conversely, here in the United States, you saw the story that came out today that Donald Trump was calling for, he actually called the Postal Service and asked them to raise the rates on Amazon and a few other companies. And you're like, well, how does that? I just wonder how the markets react to the fact that you've got a guy pointing at a specific business. I'm going to tell you, you know, if Democrats do that, had done that, I mean, they would be run out of, justifiably so, run out of town on a rail for, you know, getting in the way of the economy. And I just find it really interesting that because he's got the R label on his, you know, right after his name at, for the moment, he gets to do
we're,
the same
we're
thing.
We're letting this kind of go without without great notice or discussion. And I think that, well, we've seen this from the get-go because it started in the very beginning. Don't forget, one of the initial tweets was, Boeing, we're not going to pay that for Air Force One. They're overcharging. You know, this is it. And then there was a call out on Toyota. There was a call out on multiple corporations over tweets. And the market initially reacted strongly to that and then has tempered that reaction. And it, as we have seen, there was a lot of consternation, apparently, in that first tweet. How could Boeing charge us this much, et cetera, et cetera? And yet Boeing has managed to do extremely well.
Yeah.
Deals have continued. Air Force One is getting delivered. And Boeing is inking contracts with international partners that have to be approved by the U.S. government, and they're getting approval. So I think what we're seeing is the business mechanism around the Oval Office is operating independently of the Oval Office. So President Trump is able to, you know, make a strong statement of his personal feelings. But I think what's really interesting is that we're seeing corporations just move around that and move through it. And we're seeing the same thing with trading in the market. We're getting, you know, that trading pattern is moving a little bit of shock depending on the magnitude of the topic he's discussing. But then it seems to lessen and we're just moving through it. Like the China trade talks right now, they didn't freeze the market this week. The market held up surprisingly well, basically flat for the week.
So let's talk about earnings very quickly. I know you're short on time here. So the so earnings are this earnings season is coming to a close here. A good earnings season for American businesses.
Good earnings season for American businesses. We're about three quarters of the way through. We still have, you know, some big companies reporting next week. But what we're seeing is a lot of positive commentary. You know, the majority, so over 50% of companies, closer to 70%, have exceeded expectations in terms of sales and in terms of earnings. And so that's a really good sign. It shows that things are operating well. Managements are talking confidently about what they're seeing in the U.S. economy. That's what people care about. There are always, you know, moving pieces, but we're definitely seeing here some winners and losers. We're starting to see a normalized operating environment where companies that are positioned well can do well, and we feel those managements are really, you hear them expressing that. They're taking confidence that they feel comfortable where the American economy is and the regulatory environment that they have to work in.
All right. Very Susie nice. Sunshine, Susan Schmidt. She is Senior Vice President, Senior Portfolio Manager, Westwood Holdings in Dallas. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Susan. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Right. You guys too. Bye.
Bye. All right. We have got Mark McKinnon joining us from the circus. From that circus to this circus coming up. And again, I say this every week, but it is. It's the most astounding thing. This was an hour of television that if you were using your DVR to record it, you got screwed.
Yes, because happened to me.
It's normally half an hour, and they did an hour this week, and they didn't program it in so that the networks knew that that was happening, or that, you know, your providers knew that was happening.
But boy, was it worth it, the hour. I eventually saw it on the app, and oh my gosh, that episode was so good because all the headlines that came, that popped this past week, they were there in the room as they were happening.
Yes.
In a very intimate way in a couple of cases.
Yeah. And a crazy, crazy acknowledgement by the former CIA director. I mean, the thing is, I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, this is the best reality television ever. But it's real. It's history. It's not like a bunch of trollops running around a bachelorette house. This is actually, but the world is really happening in front of us. And true. So you had a former CIA director who, and we will ask Mark McKinnon this, who basically says to the cameras, "I know things you don't know. Just wait."
I know. That was chilling.
What? All right. We'll find out what that means. But first, Judah Bialek, standing by. WGN is in 2. Hi, Mark McKinnon joins us right now from the circus, which I don't know. I don't know if you watch your own show, Mark, but I just want
to
say, you should see it if you haven't seen it.
Time to see it.
I know. I don't know. I don't really say that facetiously because the reality is the production schedule of this is so crazy. You did an hour last week, and there were a couple of moments in this that were absolutely astounding. One, your guys were sitting in the room, or John Heilemann was sitting in the room when Michael Avenatti sent out that tweet, which started the whole thing with Michael Cohen, and then
taking money from the companies,
right, and the $500,000
from the oligarch,
and you,
and then they call Rudy Giuliani,
right? They call Rudy Giuliani on a speakerphone and go, Rudy, what do you think of what's going on here? And I thought to myself, there was a moment, Mark, where I stopped and I thought, oh my God, this is the best reality television I've ever seen. Except it's really real. This isn't like scripted reality television.
No,
that's what's amazing. I mean, Tom Wolfe said it best that you know that the reason that he writes, you know, that he wrote nonfiction is because it was looser than fiction.
Yeah, that's really
crazier
true.
Than fiction.
That's really true. It's so funny you should mention him this week, on the week of his passing, because Tom Wolfe, you know, your show is right out of the Tom Wolfe playbook of how to chart history in America.
And, well, certainly new journalism, you know, which is that he coined that phrase, and he was the kind of the tip of the spear of changing the way we the narrative around journalism, and that is definitely something we're trying to do differently. We're trying to write history as it happens, do it real time on television.
I want to play one thing, and I want to get your reaction to it. Again, this was Heilemann talking to John Brennan, who's former head of the CIA, over a beer, over a Guinness. In an Irish pub. And here is what Mr. Brennan said.
I mean, do you have a feeling, whether it's based on knowledge or instinct?
I know things you don't know, John.
No, I know that. No, I know that.
I'm not going to share.
As you look at this, you kind of feel like you can confidently say, this is just a sliver of what is going to eventually be known. Is that your gut?
I would presume that there's a lot on the domestic front involving U.S. persons that is known to Bob Mueller and his investigative team. I think it's going to be rather traumatic in many respects for a lot of people. And I think they're going to realize that their past actions are going to catch up with them eventually.
Okay.
That was kind of haunting to hear somebody in his position.
That sends a chill right up your spine, doesn't it?
Of all of the crazy, wacky things that happened on the circus and all the flash and sizzle of things that happened, that one quiet moment this week, I think, is the presage, because it's the people in the know who have, you know, have knowledge. I'm really surprised that he went as far as to say, I know things you don't know.
I agree, and that he thought things were going to happen. I mean, that is a voice of authority who knows. He, as he said, I know stuff you don't know.
Right.
Of the CIA.
Yeah. I mean, was that? I know you guys are all texting each other and the producers, you know, while this is happening in real time, because you're, you know, getting set up for this. But was that when he said that? Did Heilemann walk out of there and was like, "Oh my God, you're not going to believe what he said"?
Oh yeah. He's like, you know, stop the edit.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, it was so good. It was so good. And I don't know if you saw it too, but we also had a really good piece that was similarly kind of, you know, big thinker with General Hayden. But unfortunately, as is always the case with the show, even in that episode, he didn't make the cut, so we pushed it out on social. But I know it would interest you. So
yeah, and he has appeared a number of times on this program. He's a guy that has been absolutely. First of all, I mean, we're talking about people who really have contributed to, and you know this because you've worked in politics, you've worked in White Houses, you've been there. That there are real American heroes who have stood on that wall in an honorable and an American way. In a way that is true to the values of not just the founding fathers, but our evolved values of the last 100 years in America, and that do the right thing. And these are, you know, Brennan and guys like that are those guys. Those you know, and that to
They're
me,
servants of democracy. They put and it truly is country first.
Yeah. Right. No question. And Hayden the same way. And I don't get that same sort of warm, fuzzy feeling, actually, when I look at Washington right now. All right. How are you going to dazzle us this week?
Well, this is the last episode of our spring run. And so we're trying to tie up a lot of, and you know, there were so many loose threads this week. I'm right off the New York Times, and we're going to meet with three New York Times reporters who've all been on these stories to try and just wrap up all the threads to where they are today and where they think they're going. Because there's just, again, so much news this week that kind of like created new rabbit holes. So we want to get a sense of where this is all headed, where it stands today. We'll get them to tie it up. The other thing we did was kind of interesting was, and this is part of the discussion with the New York Times folks, is the different narratives, the different media narratives that are out there. So I went kind of behind the scenes with Don Lemon at CNN, who, of course, is, you know, Donald Trump says is the dumbest
dumb as a rock, dumbest guy on TV, and CNN, of course, is the mecca of fake news. So we went there, and then we went to the Daily Caller, which is, you know, Tucker Carlson's website. That's a conservative website, to kind of just see how, you know, see everything through the different lenses. And it was fascinating to see just how completely different they see the world and Washington and Donald Trump. So this was just a way of kind of looking at the competing narratives and how they get that narrative out.
Alex Wagner, who is the third head on the show this year, it was so, this season, so great at the Trump rally in Elkhart, Indiana.
Oh, wasn't that good? That was some good journalism, too. I mean, I was really proud of her because she, you know, she took it down the middle.
She covered that really fairly. You know, she was fair to the people she was interviewing. She let them say their piece. It wasn't one of those pieces where they make the Trump supporters look stupid. It was done in a way that that was respectful to them. And it does tell you, I mean, that's the most striking thing. I mean, if there's 57 minutes of television that is worth seeing this year, it is the last episode of the circus, because I think it encapsulates everything that we have experienced in this last number of months. And it is, and it tells you where America really is. And I don't know how we start to bridge this divide.
Well, I just keep stealing Cory Booker's line. I'm a prisoner of hope, you know. And
that's a good way to be. Really good way to be.
Do you ever think you'd be quoting Cory Booker? I don't think you did.
What is happening?
I'll be honest
with
you.
What is happening?
I don't think Mark McKinnon ever thought that.
I also enjoyed the Meghan McCain sit down, Mark, that you guys did.
Yeah,
it was excellent. Because you saw the her heart come out to you in that great interview where she just talked about keeping her father's legacy alive. And you, of course, were referencing the White House aide joke from the week, you know, about McCain and cancer.
Right.
And how he played such an integral role in the whole discussion of torture in America.
It's the reason we had a debate. It's the reason it was reformed, because of John McCain. And so his voice was there, even though he was. And it was really sweet to talk to Meghan. I hadn't really seen her since the campaign. And she was, you know, 21-year-old wild child. Grown and very poised and feisty, though, like her dad.
She
so
is.
It was cool.
Yeah, she's feisty, all right. Yeah.
Reminds me of the story I may have told you before, so excuse me if I repeat it, but the most moving moment for me with John McCain was working in the no more money, and everybody quit except for five of us who just cheers.
You know, Mark, you're breaking up here pretty significantly, so I don't know how we're going to... Because this is a story I definitely want to hear.
I do, too. And it's really hard to hear it in pieces.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Is it? No, try one more time. Try one more time.
Okay, I'll step outside and see if that's better.
Yeah.
A little clearer now?
Yes, it is, sir.
Okay, so working for John McCain, 2008, the campaign has melted down. Everybody's quit except for five of us who stay on as volunteers. We go up to New Hampshire. I'm now doing the scheduling of press, all the jobs. And the person who did it before me hands me a black as I'm getting in the car with him. We get to the next stop. There's a bunch of people, big crowd. We get out on the other side of the van so they can't see us. And he bends over submissively to me, and I'm not quite sure what's happening. Then I realize that the bag has a hairbrush, and he's asking me to comb his hair because he can't raise his arms above his shoulders because they were broken so many times when he was a prisoner of war. And I just teared up. You know, I said, this patriot, this hero, you know, has to have somebody comb his hair for him.
Yeah,
it was an amazing moment. Because he was so great and vulnerable and honest and authentic.
That's why the criticism of him, listen, he's a tough guy. I get that, you know, John McCain gave it as well as he ever got it in his life. I mean, that's the truth. But any time someone crosses the line about him being a patriot, being an honorable service person, that thing last week, to me, you know, forget about what the White House staffer, who no one ever heard of, said. To me, the worst part is what a 4-star general from the Air Force said when they call him, you know, Songbird John. And you're like,
oh my God,
what are you doing? I mean, it made me ashamed for, you know, just that moment. And I love the military and I love the Air Force specifically. I grew up around so many dedicated great airmen in my life, and they mean so much to me. And to have that said by a guy who once, you know, was a you know, a leader of those men and women. It was just awful. And so I think this is where the discourse has come, because the one thing we could always count on, I think, the one thing we could always count on were the patriots in the military and at the top ranks of the military and the intelligence community to be on the lookout, to be on that wall, and to be watching be the referees of this culture and keep us safe from foreign adversaries. That was the thing. And I don't know. It's just a scary moment. All right. Is it an hour long or 30 minutes long? Because you got to let the cable systems know.
I know. You're right, because people are trying to record on their DVRs and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So now we're going to back to a half an hour. We're going to try and do the Farley trick and leave you wanting more. And we're going to break the summer. We'll be back Labor Day through the elections to cover the midterms.
All right, Mark. Thank you so much. Really appreciate
Thank
it.
You, friends.
Amazing
it's
work.
Fun to be with you. Appreciate your support. You guys are smart folks, and I appreciate what you do. Kick it hard. Carry on regardless.
Thank you. I guess we have to. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. All right, Mark McKinnon from The Daily Beast, The Daily Telegraph, and The Circus. Boy, that's the hardest working man in politics and show business right now. See it on Sunday night on Showtime. Sometimes they run this stuff on YouTube if you don't have Showtime. If you don't have Showtime, this alone is worth it, because it is the most significant chronicling of American, of the election in 16 and since. It's entertaining, but it's also truly informative, and it's great journalism because, as I just pointed out, really fair. I mean, I was proud of this show for going out, and sometimes they swear and they do eat and drink too much on the show.
They do a lot of eating.
They do.
It's
I don't know
strange.
Why. But they were in front. They were there when Michael Avenatti put out the tweet about the $500,000 that Michael Cohen had received.
Right, like when he was formulating the tweet, they were there.
They were in the room
deciding whether it was time to send it or not.
And then. And then a couple of days later, they're posting them up about, you know, who are you really? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, and then the going out and watching the Trump rally sort of in the two Americas, where the people at the Trump rally, they don't care about any of the rest of this. It's all noise to them. They just don't care. And they don't want anybody taking away their guy, because they finally got a guy that they think understands them and is going to look out for them. And it is a really fascinating look at where just unblinking look at where we are in America right now. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Tom Skilling is joining us.
Yes, you got to set the alarm clock early tomorrow for the big royal wedding.
Absolutely.
Hold on, brought to you by, I got to get the sponsor in. Very important.
Yes.
Very important.
Let's not get ahead of
brought
ourselves.
Brought to you by Permaseal Basement Systems.
Thank Absolutely.
Roy Spencer back in 1979 had a dream, and still here we are 40 years later. Big dream.
It's still going strong.
Now, are you guys going to come over to my royal wedding party
tomorrow?
Are you
doing like the full-out party? Like,
yeah.
Will you be serving the tea and dressing up?
Absolutely. We're doing like afternoon tea early in the morning.
Oh, what a sweet idea.
Yeah.
Thanks for inviting. Ro,
yeah,
you're getting up
great.
For that.
Starts at the doors open at 3:30. In the morning.
Yeah, Violetta will be rolling right in.
I know.
Oh, I love that.
That sounds perfect.
Violetta will be texting you going, hey, I can't get there for another hour.
Yep. Got little cucumber sandwiches.
Cream cheese and cucumber.
Can I bring some friends?
Yeah, that's what she's leaving the
Absolutely.
Club with Boris.
Yeah, bring Boris.
They'll come right from the club. That makes it easy. You don't have to go home. You get the munchies at that time.
Right, yep. Trying to explain to Boris what it is.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting excited for. So this is the royal wedding, Boris.
Yes, I know. They tried to kill earlier.
Oh, gosh.
And Boris will do the same thing he does in the club.
Well, he's out of the hospital now, right?
Boris is the
Boris is
her friend, her Serbian friend who is always in the nightclubs, and he sits in that table. What you're going to need to do is put a platform down, so you can put a little low top round table up there so he can be above the crowd just slightly. And he sits back there in his sunglasses and doesn't say a whole lot. So he's just he'll be sitting in the corner kind of watching the action. You know what I mean?
He'll bring his own fog machine.
Yeah.
So you're doing all the preps? Who's doing all the preps for the big morning festivities?
The bash?
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to get it all together.
I got a catering service for you. Don't worry about it.
I figure when I get done tonight after this show, I'll go and start slicing cucumbers.
I love cucumber and cream cheese.
I do, too.
I've got a great hat, too, to wear, so it'll be fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be an awesome day.
Really? Cucumbers at 4:30 in the morning? I don't think so.
Sure.
Hey, what time does the Channel 9 with Sean Lewis, what time does that start? 4 a.m. starts at 4 a.m. and
Sean
it goes to what?
Tanya? Yeah.
Till what time?
I think as long as it goes. They normally do the morning show through... Mike, do you know what time the broadcast tomorrow goes to? Mike Hamernick is here.
Okay.
9 a.m. So
what?
From
till 9, 4 to 9.
From 4 until 9 a.m. Yeah.
That's a lot of royal.
It's a lot of royal.
Yeah. Well, I get tired of the royals by then.
It takes a long time for them to wind their way through Windsor in the carriage.
Yeah, and they're going to do a little ride around, I guess, for the folks there.
They are.
You can't miss that.
Just ask Prince Charles. Everything's taking much longer than he expected.
Well, he's walking the bride down the aisle, right?
She's obviously just said bye to her family. She's like, I got to...
Well,
her mom
is the only real immediate family member who's attending now.
Because everybody else has talked bad about her.
Well, her dad, poor devil, is undergone open heart surgery.
Mm-hmm. Stents.
Stents, I see.
Yes.
Open heart.
And we learned that he spent some time in Chicago at WTTW. Her dad used to work there as a lighting director.
Seriously?
Yeah.
How long ago was that, Anna?
It was in the 70s, I believe, because I talked to Marlene Wells' husband today. She's been a longtime WGNer, 51 years. And he was at WTTW at that time working with Tom Markle, and they connected the dots and said, that's the same Tom Markle.
Isn't that something? Yeah. So she has a little bit of a media background then in the family. That's how cool is that? That'll come in handy.
Yeah, tell that to Sean, too, so he's got a little extra.
Yeah, I've got to tell him that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I just wanted to extend the invitation. So
that's nice.
I got that thing.
Bro.
I do.
This is a very nice
invitation. You got the Preakness party.
Yeah, I got the Preakness party. Right, party.
My Preakness doesn't start at 4 in the morning.
No, I do a 13 and a half hour Preakness party.
You can attend the wedding party and then go to the Preakness party.
Yeah, you'll be all dressed up and ready to go.
You're
a seersucker if you want.
Well, you'll be a wreck by late tomorrow night.
Talk about your seersuckers going to that party.
Yeah.
That's what I did there. I don't know that this is going to be the kind of all out. These things tend to, when they start at this time of morning, it's hard to start to get. It'll get a great number for 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
As Donald Trump said, he had the best number ever in the history of 3 o'clock in the morning.
when the hostages were released.
Biggest ratings ever at 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
He would look at that kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. And he's always setting a record.
Right.
He's got to set a record for something. Yeah. But the point is that at 4 o'clock in the morning, but by the time you get to nine, I don't know. To me, I think it would be much better done in like real time. Like you start at 9 o'clock in the morning and take it to new, like to, like, it, it, you do it in American time for what it would have been.
Time delay.
Yeah, time delay to what it really would have been. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but with social media, that's so hard because everything's out there already.
That's
including the pictures and everything that happened, and it just... You can't do that.
I think you just can't.
Not something. This is a live event. You have to be with your friends and loved ones for it. So that's why it's nice that Tom has invited us.
Yeah, you gonna go? Are you gonna go? Now, what happens to your daughter and the puppy? What happens?
They come over too. Is that okay? Can the daughter and puppy come over? Because the puppy has to go out every two hours.
Yeah.
This is her puppy. I just want to let you know.
Yes. He sounds wonderful. He'll get along well with Callie, Nessa, and.
See?
And Waldo, our kitty.
Now, do the dogs dress up too, Tom?
Oh, they do. Yeah, they've been. Well, they're young ladies.
Down, Joe, down.
They're very much into this. Mm-hmm. He sounds very unfriendly.
Don't worry. Did I just miss something? Are you going to dress the cat? Is that what I just heard?
He'll put a fascinator
on the cat?
The cat's a male. So, we're going to dress
up
the ladies.
That's going to make a difference at a royal party. Well, I mean, come on.
At four in the morning.
Yeah, right. The cat doesn't know what it is at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Get the cat Northwestern gear. Go cats.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey, there's an idea. Kevin. 7.
That's perfect.
Yeah, we'll put purple outfits on.
It's all fitting. Mm-hmm. That works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you have an elderberry lemon cake, too, just like the royals.
I mean, writing notes down here. No, okay. So we want purple outfits.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't had a chance. I've been busy with weather work here, so haven't had a chance to get the little eats done and all the rest. So we're going to do the same thing. So purple outfits and...
Elderberry lemon cake.
Right.
And can you have some Red Bull for Boris?
I'll have Red Bull for Boris.
Red Bull and vodka. Gotcha. It doesn't matter which kind
coming
of vodka.
Coming right from the club. So, you know, it's just handy.
Oh, gosh.
He drinks an entire handle of Grey Goose a night, and it doesn't bother him one bit.
Well, that's good.
You couldn't tell the difference.
The Red Bull, it equals everything.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And well, both drunk and high at the same time.
The cake has... what is it, 40 pounds of butter in it or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
44 pounds. Yeah, I know. That sounds marvelous, doesn't it?
I did watch that. That was the most royal coverage I've followed, is they detailed
the
every inch of the cake they were making, and oh, my God, that cake looks outstanding.
I know. It really
is. It's just layer after layer, and it's like, next thing you know, this sort of butter. Now we hit it with this kind of butter.
Right.
This sweet cream.
Oh, can't go wrong.
It's like, oh, man.
It's a real heart stopper in more ways than one.
Right. Well, it's a buttercream frosting. Mm-hmm. There's nothing better on the planet than buttercream frosting.
Good. It's
but
true.
Let me just tell you how to make buttercream frosting. Take a stick of butter, put sugar over it, and then eat it.
Great.
And you have buttercream frosting.
No wonder. It tastes so good.
Yeah.
So there's an elderflower. I'm sorry. It's elderflower glaze that's on the lemon loaf cake.
Ooh.
So
ooh.
There you go. You can
that's
do that.
Right. That's what she was
now,
talking about.
Now, what is elderflower? I mean, these are... What is it? Is it a?
That's the flower of the elderberry.
Oh, okay. All right. So, does it have kind of an elderberry taste, or
kind of an elderberry wine kind of moment here? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It could.
Listen, this is pretty, again.
No, this is important.
We fought a war.
We've got to do this.
We fought a couple wars.
I'll tell you. You keep going back to 1776.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
Great year.
Excuse me. 1812. They were still fighting with us in 1812.
Well, yeah. You took
so it's 200 years. 208 years ago, we were still fighting with them about this.
And now
we got to sit around. We got to watch. I know she's an American.
Well,
I know she's got a Chicago
no.
background.
Yes, right.
We're being extended an olive leaf here. Oh, you know, just olive branch.
Olive branch. The olive leaf is something else.
Yeah. And so...
Fig leaf. Jeez. We're getting a fig leaf.
No.
I think, quite honestly, I think you're going to need a fig leaf tomorrow if you're going to do this party.
I think I need more than a fig leaf.
I think that's what you're going to need. Hey, I do wonder, though, do we know if the weather in London is good tomorrow?
You know, I hadn't really looked at it because
there's a whole outdoor component to this.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, think about it. There's a 5-hour time change. So that's interesting. So if we start at 4 in the morning.
It'll be 9 in the morning their time.
They're 5 hours later, right? So it's about 9 in the morning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's works well for the folks
right,
there.
It's going to go till noon. I think the actual ceremony is at 11 or something, and then they go to noon.
Yeah.
And then noon to 1 for the where they ride around in a carriage and everybody decides whether or not they want to have a revolution. I saw that in Tale of Two Cities. That's the only thing I remember.
Sure. I've got to check this out because, do you know, last week they had a heat wave in Scandinavia. They were in the upper 80s.
Oh.
So I'm wondering.
Oh, my God, with that skin, what's going to happen there?
Wow.
Is it sunny? Because, I mean, those people would die, I think.
I know. It's very warm.
A lot of sunscreen.
Yeah. I'm trying to punch up the
a little London
weather here.
A little London weather for you.
Weather London and, you know, let me see here.
We really care more about what's going to happen here.
Well,
we'll get to that.
Yeah, it looks a little warmer tomorrow. You know, we've had that wind off the lake. These little showers will scatter into the morning and then should shut down. And we ought to get a little sun mixed with the clouds in the afternoon. But because there's a lighter wind, that means that we'll probably find ourselves with warmer temperatures. Now, I see 60, let's see here, over in London, 71
Celsius, 71. Which means they're going to
burn
alive. No,
that's fair. That's fair.
Okay, all right, good. Yeah.
If it's 71 Celsius, we're all in trouble.
Right.
That's like global warming.
Yeah, that would be right. They're going to physically melt. The buttercream's going to melt. I can tell you that right now.
That's true.
Trouble
still
the
tastes good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No matter what.
All right.
It does. George
and by the way, sunny, too.
Perfect.
Isn't that nice?
George and Amal Clooney have confirmed they will be attending the royal wedding. So some of the guest list.
So they're not coming to our party.
Not coming to Tom's party, I guess. Now they can't.
Oh, sorry, I didn't.
Is there a representative of the White House? Are they sending Ryan Zinke or somebody over there? Who are they sending?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, you know they got to send Mnuchin's wife. That is the person they got to send.
She would be great.
No, isn't Melania going?
Melania's not out of the hospital yet.
No, that's true.
No, I don't think
but
she
wasn't
is.
She invited?
Didn't no, the I Trumps hear? Plan to send a royal wedding gift in yes. lieu of attendance.
I see.
A yes. gigantic buttercream middle finger.
A big Tiffany's box. That's what yeah. they like to give.
Exactly. An awkward Tiffany's box and just show up there. Here, hold on to this.
With a Cambridge Analytica logo on it.
Yes.
Oh,
gee. No, I like it. Oh, you know what? I like that. That was very,
you know.
Very, the assassin know. Right there. Yeah.
Tell you, that just kind of rolled off the lips easily.
I see what you
here,
did right? right there. Hey, yeah. I wonder, though, they got to be sending somebody. The American government has to be sending somebody technically, right?
I'm sure. I'm
sure. They said they were keeping it 600 people and that they weren't going to be inviting former
presidents
and politicians. That yeah. wasn't really what they wanted to do.
Right. Because there's an awkward way. Because if they invite one, they got to invite them all.
I know.
I think it's where this all goes.
Yeah.
And no Trumps, no Obamas, no Clintons will be at the wedding.
Yeah.
So there you go. Or other politicians, really.
The French, the Macron is not going with his wife?
That's not on the list that I could see here. Prime Minister Theresa May is also not expected to attend.
Oh.
That's interesting,
so think
huh?
about that for a second.
Yeah, they really have written off the politicians mm-hmm. on this.
Yeah, I think for exactly what I'm afraid I'm right about this, which is if you invite one, you got to invite
absolutely
all.
You right.
can't, then, you,
right.
then you got a mess. And so then 600? The queen is like, I'm not having him.
That's very understandable. Honestly, that's yes, probably it not a bad way to approach it.
Yeah, and that. But George and Amal will be there, which would be you know
yeah,
that's
some
something.
Star power.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Are the other actors in Suits going to be there?
Yeah, I think one of them for sure is.
Yeah, her husband from Suits.
Oh, Mike, that's going to be awkward.
Will be there.
Meanwhile, yeah. her real ex-husband says he's leaving the country because he's sick of all the paparazzi getting all over him, and so he wants to be nowhere around during the wedding.
Who's that, Anna?
Her ex-husband.
Oh.
Meghan Markle's first husband, Trevor.
She's been married before?
Yeah.
Huh.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, that's part of that is a bit of the controversy here.
Ooh. Yeah.
It's only one part of the controversy for them in England, but that's part of the controversy. And this is and what is it? Now what he was is he an actor? Was
he is.
Actor?
In fact, he's working on a sitcom about a divorced American woman who moves to London to marry a British royal.
Are you kidding?
Not kidding.
No, of course, because they were like, "All right, here's what we got to do."
Wow. Cha-ching.
What third-tier yeah. cable channel decided to come up with this?
Yeah.
Well, he's been contacted to try to cease the production of that. I don't know if that's happening, but he is not attending the wedding, of course. He'll be nowhere near it, and he also doesn't want to be anywhere near the press.
Yeah. Try to, I think it's sort of avoid the ex's weddings. Unless
that
you have one of the really open kind of, you know, like, oh, we're still best friends.
And you never really believe it because it always is sort of like, you know, triangulates things when
yes.
he's around.
It's always awkward when you have to pick up your kids at your ex-spouse's wedding, you know, because the party's starting now and you got to take the kids somewhere else.
Oh, gee.
That's, you know, every divorced parent knows that. Either way, boys, girls, it doesn't matter. Men, women, husbands, wives, that's you know, that's an awkward moment when you have to pick up the kids with the car or drop them off at the wedding. Oh, yeah, enjoy your mom.
I still
mom.
Think this is very cool that we got somebody, an American,
I do too.
Marrying into this.
I do, too.
And not only that one with a Chicago connection.
That's
well,
right.
We
that's
already
pretty cool.
did this, though, 50 years ago. We did this with that, what's yeah, her face?
Right.
Or 60 years, 70 the, years ago. The
Grace Kelly?
Right.
No. No, you're talking about Wallace Simpson.
Yes, Wallace Simpson. Yeah.
Who was scheduled to marry the man who would become King Edward. And he abdicated the throne for her because of this divorced American woman.
Right, Grace Kelly doesn't count because she married the guy from Monaco and that's not real.
I don't care.
They're so cute.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know if you see that. If you read
changed,
the history of that relationship, that's so cute.
I know, but the pictures are nice.
Yeah, the one picture is nice. All right, the day of. You cut the cake and that's it. Now 40 years of hell. All right, Tom. So, you
so
got,
guys, 3:30 tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Early rise.
All right, Sunday, by the way, is it going to be nice here?
It'll be okay. It'll be cloudy. There'll be some peaks of sun. Might be a shower, thunder showers. But I think there'll be many, many dry hours. It'll be cooler Sunday because the wind will pick up again off the lake. So warmer tomorrow, cooler Sunday. And then we go into a whole series of near 80-degree days away from the lake. It'll be more like the upper 60s, low 70s shoreline next week. So it looks pretty nice.
All right.
Yeah.
Take it.
Very cool.
Well done, sir.
See you in the morning.
You bet. See you in the morning, guys.
Oh,
happy Friday.
If I don't see you. I can't have cucumbers in the morning. They give me gas.
Well, then don't go.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye, guys.
Here is Here is Judy. Judy, what's coming up in like 2 minutes? Oh, here we go.
So excited.
Oh, why? What's wrong with you people?
It's going to be so fun to watch.
Have some crumpets?
Mm-hmm. All right, tomorrow morning at 3:30 on NBC, the coverage begins, and Keir Simmons is part of the coverage scheme, as they like to say, for the royal wedding. The royal wedding between American, former Chicagoan, and Northwestern graduate Meghan Markle.
Yes, go Cats.
To the to the prince. I don't know.
He's sixth in line to the British throne.
Do you realize what would have to happen for him to assume the British throne? I mean, it's
we care about that.
Bubonic plague times 100. All right, Keir, let's talk about what it's going to look like tomorrow. First of all, your coverage starts at 3:30, which means it's like 7:30 in the morning there, right? Or it's 8:30 in the morning.
Right. Although Yeah, that is right, although I do have to be there quite a lot earlier than that. So where are we now? It's like it's almost 11 here now, and after I've spoken to you and spoken to the nightly news on NBC, then I will be going to bed, and then I will be up again in the early hours. Because, as you know, my friend, there is nothing glamorous in showbiz.
No.
Even in a royal wedding.
Not this part, man. I know. I know. They treat you like they treat you like cattle in a situation like this. Like, get over there! Don't say anything!
Stand behind that line.
Yeah. All right.
The blockade.
So what?
You sound like you could be a palace official. That's perfect.
Yeah, I've covered enough of these kinds of events. All right, let's talk about not this kind of event because we fought a war, so we didn't have to. But whatever.
He's not on board yet. Sorry,
I'm really not. All right, but let's talk about the pomp and circumstance surrounding this because you've got obviously like the Markle family. She's still a bit of an orphan at this. Her mom's going to be there. Do we know why they've chosen now to go with Prince Charles as opposed to the mom to walk her down the aisle?
I have some clues. Wait, you're not on board?
I'm not on board.
No, he thinks it's not a big deal.
Excited?
No.
You're not a big royalist? Oh, my friend, come on, let me tell you why you should be.
Because, all right, sell me.
Okay, great. So here we are in a world where all the politicians around the world seem to be telling us to close the door on everyone, to bring down the shutters, to stay in our bubbles. And here is an unelected member of the British royal family who is reaching out around the world. He is marrying tomorrow this American girl, this woman, this proud woman, describes herself as a feminist, African-American heritage. She's amazing, and I think it's pretty amazing that he has chosen her, and I think it has a lot to do with the kind of intuitive kind of guy he is and the fact that he's the son of Diana. So that's why I think you should be happy about it, but I think the decision tomorrow is a little more traditional about that than that. I think they've chosen Prince Charles because Prince Charles, they know... it's a lot of pressure. There are millions watching. I think they know that he will do a flawless job, and that's really what they're looking for.
So let me ask you about her family.
Have I persuaded you?
No.
He's not important.
Just walking down the aisle, though, before we get to Anna's question, the walking down the aisle, that's so tough. I mean, it's like, I did
well,
it.
Well, you know, a billion people are watching you. Of course
yeah,
you wanna,
but I think the mom would have been a better play. I don't know, but maybe the... I don't know.
Wasn't her mom first going to do it, and then it was announced by the palace that Charles would do it?
Her mom, I don't think her mom was ever going to really do it, but it's an interesting point because, you know, always with the royals, they're trying to walk this line between being traditional, which is the way we all see them, and also knowing that they have to change and they have to keep up with modern times and they cannot look out of contact, you know, out of disconnected. And any time that they've looked disconnected, like, for example, after the death of Diana, that's when they have felt most in danger and felt like the institution's in trouble. So it's an interesting point. You know, why do they make these decisions? Again, though, I just think that for Doria, Meghan's mom, maybe it was a bit too much of an ask to have her walk her down the aisle in front of millions of people around the world.
Yeah, a billion people around the world before it's done, probably.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I'm dying to ask you about how the British press is handling her family matters, because we see it over here, the drama. Her half-brother wrote the letter to Harry, don't do it. Now it's come out her half-sister is pitching Hollywood agents about diary of a princess pushy sister or something. I mean, they've got all this stuff coming out that's so negative at a time that's so happy for their family member, and I can't even imagine.
I know. We're so cynical, us British. We're just such a nasty bunch. I love the way, you know, the British, you know, have this reputation for being so polite and civil and lovely to everyone. In fact, we're not. We're the nastiest nation on the world, and our newspapers are the perfect example of that. So, yes, you're right. There's been all this stuff in the tabloids. You know something, actually, though, and here's some criticism for the royal family, you know, and if you see it again and again. The royals should have been out there helping Meghan's family. You know, Dad should have had somebody out there with him. They should have brought him over earlier. You know, this is a really intimidating thing, particularly if you have been living the kind of life that it appears as if he's been living. I want to judge from the outside. A lot of incorrect things get written. But, you know, I think the royals could have handled it better, and I'm afraid they've made these kind of mistakes before. Having said that, the fact that Doria is here, I don't know if Doria is here, Meghan's mom, I don't know if you've seen the pictures, but she looks fantastic tonight. She's just been to have tea with the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh. I mean, how terrific is that? We weren't allowed to get pictures, but just the image of it, you know, Doria Ragland, Meghan's mom, you know, for much of the time raised Meghan as a single mom in California, and there she is meeting the Queen of England. I just love that.
That's beautiful.
Let me ask you an actually operational thing. Is Prince Philip going to be at this tomorrow? His health is not well, right?
You're right. He is not as well as he was in the past. However, he will be there tomorrow, and he will look terrific because, you know, these royals, they are very, very good at standing in official situations and looking incredibly interested and happy, even if they are.
They've got that nailed.
It's their job.
They're also great at not needing the bathroom for hours and hours.
It's kind of Pensian, isn't it? They do the Pence thing.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is kind of an interesting world, man. I mean, you have one job to be a royal, and that is to stand around and not go to the bathroom like a camel for 12 hours.
That is a perfect description. That is royal life. Just encapsulated right there.
Keir, you're talking about the guest list. We're seeing now across that George and Amal Clooney are going to be there, and maybe some other celebrities I want to ask you about. But this is not this isn't like an official state wedding because they're not inviting a lot of politicians, and even Theresa May not be there. Is that right?
Oh, no. Theresa May, the Prime Minister, won't be there. Donald Trump, the President, won't be there. President Obama, who is actually friends with Prince Harry, won't be there. Listen, I'll tell you something about Harry. Harry is his own man. He makes his own decisions. He has been deciding his guest list. He has been saying, I don't want to see anyone back there in that church that I don't know, who aren't friends, who don't have a reason to be there. I don't want this kind of official, nameless people, faceless people to me being there. And so it's not going to be a political event, but it will be a showbiz event. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
You know, others, the Spice Girls, Serena Williams, Elton John. I mean, the potential folks that will be turning up in their best hats and dresses and outfits. It's going to be fun.
All right.
Oh, that will be fun.
All right, fine.
Are you there, Ro?
I'm not quite. I'm not there at 3:30 in the morning. I'll tell you that right now, Keir. I'm sorry. I know you got to get up. I don't got to get up. It's your job. You're getting paid. I'm not getting paid to be there. All right. Keir, thank you very much. We appreciate
it. All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks to Lester for letting Keir call us. That was very nice of him. Keir Simmons on the scene there. He'll be part of your coverage tomorrow for the NBC coverage of the royal wedding starting at 3:30 in the morning on NBC5.
Yeah. 312, will the Queen do the chicken dance? Forgot to ask him that. Gonna guess.
Ew.
I wonder if there's any moment where it breaks a little bit loose. You know, there's so much pomp and circumstance. Is there like an after party where finally
I don't think the Queen goes? Right?
I don't think so.
We sent Grandma home from the wedding. I can tell you that.
David Beckham and Posh Spice and these two gonna loose and all the celebrity guests when they get together. I wonder if they even get that. Because it seems like Harry would enjoy that's his thing.
Yeah, you know what? With all this, Harry, he's a prince. Remember Harry in the Las Vegas hotel room?
Oh, he likes to party.
They had like a tiger in the hotel. I think they based the Hangover on Prince Harry's experience in a Las Vegas hotel room.
Wasn't he naked playing pool or something?
Yes.
Yep. Who hasn't been naked playing pool?
Yeah.
You think they're going to have the drunk food like that people do now at weddings where they bring pizza and burgers out late night?
The late night thing?
Yeah.
And Grandma's on the first shuttle back to the hotel, you know? Oh, you grab this one. We'll be right behind.
All right, she's gone. Let's go. Keg stands.
The Queen's gone.
No, Mom, you know what? You go with her, too. Mom,
take
Dad, keep, yeah, take care of her.
Make sure she gets home safe. Get in bed. They're gone. Hit it.
You can see that with Harry. I could.
That's when Boris rises from the rafters.
He's there. He starts
Boris can't make it to Tom Skilling's royal party because he's actually going to the wedding himself.
Party on the way there.
Because he set up Prince Harry when he was here in the United States on something.
They're boys.
Right? It was right, exactly. They were like, and Boris is like, what do you need? I can get you. Do you want entertainment? Do you want dancers or do you want dancers? I think you know the difference. All right, let's find out now from Judy Pilek what's coming up at the top of the hour. That's a Rokan show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN.
Why don't you host us tomorrow morning for a royal party? Get the whole crew over there, Ro. I think you need to get into this.
Why just ask Violetta? She's got keys to the place.
Yeah, why don't you just...
That she made when she was there. She's got that thing where she has like a thing of wax that you sink a key into and then you take it over to, you know, your guy, Boris.
He's got a
cuts
locksmith.
I cut that into the locksmith, hook you up. Don't worry. We fix...
You don't even have to get up. We'll take care of everything.
Yeah,
just stay upstairs.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to go. Yeah,
we'll make the cucumber sandwiches.
You'll want to come down though, because we'll be having a party.
Last time you people were at my house,
mm-hmm. What was wrong with that?
I got a call from the homeowners association.
They're lying.
You didn't.
I did.
No, it didn't happen.
Yeah,
they're just angry.
I did. I got a call.
They're just jealous they weren't there.
Yeah. I tried inviting them last minute, but then they were like, no.
Yeah, I got that. Well,
if you stay, we're going.
I had the whole Mrs. Kravitz, keep it down! Kind of moment.
That's how you are.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Violetta has a way of standing up and saying, I have something to say! And then she says it. Okay. I have something to say.
That's true. I think,
Can I say something?
Wasn't it you, Richard Roper, that took the video of her while she was just going off on something?
You had interrupted me or something. I'm like, okay, Ro, I'm talking here.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't even believe myself when I listened to that. I'm like, is that what I sound like?
Yeah, you were enjoying the free drinks and food provided.
Great drinks and food. Really? That's why we need to do it at your house.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think it was Violetta's dad who provided the food.
That's true.
I provided the drinks.
That's true. He did. He drove over.
Yeah. So that was very nice. That was last. It was for Anna's birthday.
That's
that was last summer.
So that's good. Well, right. So and that's coming up again.
That's right. That's coming up in August, and maybe by then we'll
we'll be friends again.
Yeah. Maybe we could do that again. Wow. I was thinking about doing a thing actually to celebrate both Kev and my birthday and do like a split thing.
A boy's birthday.
No chicks allowed.
No.
Boys' night out. Have fun, girls.
I don't like that. Thinking about
doing something.
That sounds like trouble.
Like that. Well,
having
something.
Are you guys going to the Stormy Daniels for your
birthday? We'll start and end at Rose Patio. And in between, we'll say hello to Stormy.
Stormy, would you like to maybe see the patio? I got a fire pit now.
Tell him about your architect.
It's this young gentleman's birthday here, Stormy. Can we get a birthday special?
Show her some deck pictures.
Show her some deck pictures. That's a good idea.
That'd be great to invite her over just as Stephanie Clifford, just to hang out, like in a mock turtleneck, and just like, you know,
my neighbors walking by, and they go, Isn't that?
Who's the lady at Mr. Khan's?
I stopped for some cupcakes, guys. I thought you might want some dessert. Thanks, Stephanie.
You got to get the hot tub ready for that.
That'd be so great.
You never know. There have been some weird guests in my house, though. And every once in a while, the neighbors will walk by and they'll go, is that?
What is
he
doing?
Just keep moving.
Sometimes they're in full uniform. Yeah. Sometimes there's some sort of bodyguard posted outside. But it's something great. Like, so, Stephanie, what do you do? Well, I'm an entrepreneur.
Self-employed.
No one invites her to anything as Stephanie Clifford. She comes over if you invite her to come over as
Stephanie.
Is that
her real name?
That's her real name.
But even that name sounds kind of like Stephanie Clifford. I don't know.
Attorney at law.
All right. Are you ready? Because it's time to get to this.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, checking in at
number five.
Oh, this is weird. Chris Hayes sat down from MSNBC, sat down with Bill Gates, And Bill Gates told a story about his meeting, his very strange meeting he had with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have these meetings now, and they just can't wait. They don't know when the appropriate time is to come out and tell the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true.
Starts with the awkward handshake.
Yeah. Right. But here's where it is. He said that, you know, because the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they do a lot of world health issues, mm-hmm. right?
They, sure they do.
Clean drinking water and trying to... stop the spread of sexually transmitted diseases.
Mosquito-borne illness diseases as well. I mean, there you
right.
are.
So, it appears that the president, according to Bill Gates, had a little trouble knowing the difference between the sexually transmitted diseases HIV and HPV.
He was considering a commission to look into ill effects of vaccines, and somebody, his name is Robert Kennedy Jr., was advising him that vaccines were causing bad things. And I said, no, that's a dead end. That would be a bad thing. Don't do that. Both times he wanted to know if there was a difference between HIV and HPV. So I was able to explain that those are rarely confused with each other.
Yeah.
He also seemed to know a lot about his daughter's equestrian activities.
Yes. Oh. That's coming up right here. Hold on. This is where the daughter comes into play here. Melinda Gates got a little uncomfortable with the line of questioning.
So when I first talked to him, it was actually kind of scary how much he knew about my daughter's appearance. But Melinda didn't like that too well.
And then there was this.
There was a thing during the election where he and I were at the same place and I avoided him. Anyway, then he got elected, and so I went to see him in December. He knew my daughter Jennifer because Trump has this horse show thing down in Florida. In fact, he went up and talked to Jen and was being super nice. And then, like 20 minutes later, he flew in a helicopter to the same place. So clearly he had been driven away, but he wanted to make a grand entrance in a helicopter.
Jeez. That is similar to the story that Pete Davidson, we had on the Top 5 yesterday, where Pete Davidson told the story about when Trump was at Saturday Night Live, and he had a phone call. He reached into his pocket like he was answering a phone call, and then he goes, oh, yeah, thank you, and then hangs up and says, oh, my book is number one. Like, he faked a phone call just to brag at the table about his book.
Jeez.
So he had to fly into his own.
Oh, my gosh.
But you know what? Listen, let me tell you something. That worked.
It works.
It worked.
He's like the
became president of the United States doing that stuff.
He's like the dilly dilly every time they have to bring a fresh keg in. You know, they have to do that for him every time. And you know, Bill Gates, I don't think I've ever heard him say a negative thing about anyone ever in public.
Right?
He just doesn't
see that.
He's a pretty private guy, does his thing. He's worth like 100 times what Donald Trump even claims to be worth. And does all this great stuff, but I mean, just think of he turned Bill Gates into a first-rate stand-up. He's telling great stories. I got to tell you, there's something wrong.
Wait, what's the difference between HIV and HPV? If I'm the president, and you know, you're having unprotected sex with porn stars, I'd learn the difference fast.
Seems like necessary information.
Yeah, I would think
number four.
Perhaps frustrated by the media's tepid response to his ho-hum Wednesday night appearance on the Ingram angle, former New York City mayor and current Trump lawyer, I use that term loosely, Rudy Giuliani, dialed it up this morning on CNN's Chris Cuomo.
It's like Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart never would have gone to jail if she hadn't gone and testified. What do you think, we're
stupid? She lied. She lied. I covered
arguably,
that case.
Lying is black and white. It isn't black and white. The president is not going to lie. Let's get that straight. The president is going
to
tell...
What gives you confidence to say...
Because I've gone over the whole thing. I've investigated the whole thing. There's nothing to lie about.
Out of habit, he practices mendacity.
That's a disgraceful comment about the president of the United States. Out of habit, the president defends himself against the press.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Now that's disgraceful?
Yeah.
Is that where we're
that's
starting?
Disgraceful, wow. Right. That mendacity. First of all, this is... Cat on a hot tin roof, anybody? I mean, no. What are we doing here?
Just say his pants are on fire every day. He lies so much.
All right, but then Giuliani got really mad because Cuomo brought up a 1998 interview with Charlie Rose.
Why, when asked about that situation in 1998, did you say, president can't duck a subpoena?
Well,
if you get subpoenaed, you got to comply. You got to go.
He can't. He can't. I never heard of a subpoena for the president's person.
Well, you said exactly that.
No, no.
Here's Charlie Rose with you in the interview, and you tell me what you meant.
Oh, come on.
What, you don't want to hear
it? It's not even relevant.
If the president is asked to testify... subpoenaed.
That's really unfair. What you're doing right now is extremely unfair.
I'm giving you a chance.
The reason people don't come on the show.
Oh, not going to do it.
With all that, that promoting of Avenatti, the ambulance.
What happens if Robert Mueller?
What does that have to do with this? Because they're all trying to bring Trump into that, and he's not involved in it, Chris.
He literally just talked over his lie. He's like, oh, if I just keep talking, they won't hear it. It's like when they ask the question, they're like, I can't hear you. I'm not going to answer this question.
Very Tim Russert, I thought.
And then you got to bring in Charlie Rose, who now sounds creepier than ever when you hear him, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. And it just went from that to that.
When you say subpoena. Right. What? Wait a minute. All right, now here's Giuliani.
Do you know that most people think that I'm crazy to come on here? That it's
Why?
So unfair to the president? That
do you think this interview has been unfair?
Yeah, I do.
You think this interview has been unfair?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because I don't think you've given me a chance to explain how unjust this case is. I don't think you've given me a chance to explain the basis of it with the FBI report that was faulty. The FBI report that came to the conclusion. I don't understand how a man can be prosecuted when you come to a conclusion and do anything wrong.
I would, if I'm Chris Cuomo, I would have let him just explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would have wound the president into subpoenas 8, 9, and 10 by the time he's done. Every time he's out there, he admits to something else. And I'm starting to wonder if there's a method to this, that they're trying to inoculate the public for things that are going to come out. Because that's exactly what it was like last week, right? When Cuomo, Giuliani was out, you know, in the aftermath of the whole Michael Cohen thing, I'm going to tell you something here. You're going to learn something for the first time. Mm. First time is, yes, he paid him back that money. The president paid Michael Cohen back that money. And then I don't know if Sean Hannity faked that he was stunned or was really stunned by it. Mm-hmm. But then it had to come out because they knew it was going to come out that he had paid him back. Because this week on Tuesday, the president had to submit a financial statement that made it clear that he had paid it back under penalty of perjury if he did not make it clear that he had paid it back.
So he did it on purpose. A lot of people thought it was a slip that Giuliani made.
I think Giuliani is doing is letting all of this stuff out piece by piece because he's out in front of the president doing it, so the president doesn't have to do it or the White House doesn't have to do it. Mm-hmm.
Make a little more sense.
And then he gets to beat up on CNN and go, you people are unfair and we shouldn't throw you off the air. And believe me, when we're in charge, well, we are in charge. What happens now? All right, we'll get to your three, your two, and your one. But first, Judy Pollack tells us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Like Ernie said, let's play two. It's a Cubs-Reds doubleheader Saturday at noon and 6 o'clock on WGN-TV Sports.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Yeah. All right. Top 5 of 5 continues. We've worked our way to
number 3.
Back home, someone to come. Wash away the rain.
It was a year ago today that Chris Cornell died. That is amazing to me. Now, what's interesting is that his family is going to be holding a vigil tonight on the one-year anniversary at a cemetery in Hollywood. I don't know what's creepier. I don't know. Really?
Well, the wife recently came out and said she was upset about the medical examiner jumping immediately to suicide as the cause of death, and that she felt that was a botched
as opposed to accidental
investigation.
Drug overdose? Mm.
She feels as if there might be something more to it.
All right. The story goes on.
Number 2.
Speaking of that, Steven Tyler.
Uh-oh.
He was no stranger to the many various different types of drugs and alcohol one kind of a rock star could consume at any given moment. He was on Spill Your Guts or Fill Your Guts with James Corden, you know, on the late show with James Corden. In which the guest has to choose between answering revealing questions or eating disgusting food.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yuck.
But Steven Tyler, do you think Steven, you know what Steven Tyler's put in his mouth over the years? I don't think that scared him.
As a rock star, your life is all about excess. How much have you spent on drugs in your lifetime?
About $2 million.
Are you serious?
I snorted half of Peru. I mean, ask anybody that's going to be honest with you. Come on.
Best guest ever. All right.
That's low. That number's low. Well, you know, but then on the other hand, think about how often he was just gifted. Mm-hmm. Gifted with the drugs, right? If you're Steven Tyler,
he checked with his accountant. They wrote $2 million of Bolivian marching powder to the IRS. I remember an interview. I remember a Johnny Carson interview with Aerosmith.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
They were all on the set with him.
They were young,
and I mean, this was fairly early. This is into the 80s. This wasn't the 70s. So this would have been the Sex in the Elevator era, you know, the sort of mid 80s. Mm-hmm. And Steven Tyler told a story about the fact that they were broke. They were totally broke. Mm-hmm. If they didn't come out with Dude Looks Like a Lady, they would have been just gone totally under. Wow. And that was luckily a hit. And the reason that they were totally broke was that the record company, they put them out on tour, and they were making all this money, and they saw how much money they were making, because a lot of those acts get paid in cash at the end of the night, and their managers take the cash. Mm. They saw the money, and they gave them credit cards. They wouldn't give them the cash.
Oh, geez.
And they would say, just take the credit cards and go do whatever you got to go do.
Oh, boy.
And they didn't realize they were getting charged for their hotel rooms, and they were getting, all that sort of stuff, which is, they figured they had changed their contract, and it was different. And they ended up losing millions of dollars on the tour.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, when Johnny Carson asked him a question, did they have to eat something, or was it just answer this, or I'll stub my cigarette out on your hand? Or did he just... Everybody has to have a twist now, right?
Yeah, that's true. All right. And no, Johnny can just do it the real way and make it entertaining.
Number one.
All right, whether you're Team Yanni or Team Laurel.
Laurel. Oh,
Laurel. The White House, of course you are. The White House has decided to put out a video they were hoping would go viral, which would change the subject.
Yeah.
I think it's actually a pretty cute video.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got Mike Pence, known for his comedic stylings, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and Kellyanne Conway, all answering the question. Listen to this.
So clearly Laurel.
It's Laurel. But I could deflect and divert to Yanni if you need me to.
Sarah, it's been reported that you hear Laurel. How do you respond?
Clearly you're getting your information from CNN, because that's fake news. All I hear is Yanni.
I hear Covfefe.
I mean, that was pretty clever.
The Covfefe's pretty good.
I do like that's Kellyanne Conway. You know, have you noticed something about Kellyanne Conway? First of all, her husband has been, tweeting stuff about the
negative
president that's been negative.
Mm-hmm.
And she has basically been saying, listen, I wasn't there when all of this went down. Like, I replaced Paul Manafort. I don't know what was going on there. And now she's like, I will distract and deflect for cash. She's basically saying,
at least she's being honest.
I'm a hired hand. Don't
find the things that everyone says about them. They're being ironic.
Yeah. I don't know.
The problem is the production values, which are basically your mom and dad on your graduation when they go, hey, we put together a video too, where they got the little whistling banjo music in the background.
And by the way, if they want to figure out who the leakers are, the leakers are the 28-year-olds who are back there with their cell phones making the viral videos for them.
I feel like their social media person is a guy who was a producer on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In and is 84 years old. I just figured out how to work this MP7. And I got some music behind the video.
All right, let's close it up.
The top five at five.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot.
Great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life, and I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it, I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
And his first sentence kind of threw me off. He said, Trump hears
that you don't like what Trump is doing. And I thought, wow, but you're Trump. So I don't, you know, I didn't know if the third party form was what was expected. Well, you know, Gates says that Gates knows that you're not doing things right.
Wow.
Okay, Bill Gates needs to go on tour, I think. Hey. He's more humor in there than we thought.
As you pointed out, we've seen Bill Gates do a billion things, right? You know, actually, we've seen him for every 100 times, we've seen him for every $1 billion he has, we've seen him do something. And yet, I've never seen him actually break bad on anybody or be funny or have any kind of personality. Now, all of a sudden, he's
very neutral.
When did this happen?
You know, Trump is eventually going to tweet back that he makes the worst windows and he had some of Gates' windows at Mar-a-Lago and they cracked.
That's going to be bad. All right, listen, it's time to eat and drink. That is the most important. It's a Friday.
Happy Friday.
Time to put all of this other stuff aside, all the bad stuff aside, and let's just have some fun. And coming up, Richard Roper is going to tell us, too. Not only, as he already told us, that it is certainly worth our time to go see the brand new Deadpool 2. But there's three other things you could do this weekend as well that he's going to tell you about that he likes. Four new things.
So I'd like to tell you about them. I'm not going to tell you that I like them. Let's just put it that way.
All right. Well, there's things coming
up.
We'll see. But in the meantime, this, by the way, is one of the great, I think, undersung until this very moment, restaurants in Chicago is here. And I want to thank them for being here. Bistronomique. The proper way to say it.
Bistronomic
is in Chicago, what you call
it. Depending on where you are from.
You're from certain parts where I come from. Again, you know, I had a gut problem, so I went to the Bistronomic guy, and he fixed me.
No, Bistronomic is one of the great restaurants. It is, you got to find it, because it's on a street. You got to be able to, you know, kind of know exactly where you're going downtown.
Really?
It's in the Gold Coast Streeterville area, 840. North Wabash,
okay,
right there, right in that little area by where Quigley, you know, North used to be, and
just north
that.
Of Chicago Avenue,
just north of Chicago Avenue.
Great location,
yeah. And you walk in, it's like this modern room, and it's classic French food with a modern flair. Nice. It's absolutely great. Marcel Noguier is the chef and proprietor. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. It's one of those places where you walk in, and it's so great, but not in any way pretentious about being great. And there's so many restaurants now that are great in Chicago, but they let you know they're pretentious about it.
It'd be a little intimidating.
Yeah, and it's not intimidating at all. And it's great, and it's great French food, which, you know, I think people think, well, you know, there must be an event kind of thing. I don't think it has to be an event to do French food. Do you?
No, I think it's easy to do French food. And we do classical French food, but a little bit modern, a little bit more sophisticated. And the most important, we use the Greenstreet Market. Means I go, you know, every Wednesday, Saturday to do my market. We buy
fresh
from Nico's farm, you know. We use the cheese from Capriol Farm, goat cheese, you know. Means we try to be like a real French bistro in Paris, going to the market in the morning, buying the food, and after this, you know, come back to the kitchen, cook the food for the night.
Yes.
You're so ambitious with that, Anna.
Right?
I agree.
That'd be fun to go along with the chef, wouldn't it? Anna, wouldn't you want to do that? Like, just as he's going to the market?
I would love that. You could
do you know the Greenstreet Market?
Yes.
But you know, if I go there, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to take, you know, a gigantic handful of green stuff and shove it in my face.
Well,
and go, I know exactly what I'm doing. Chef, you can do that. You know exactly what you're looking for. I have no idea what I'm looking
for. You could, the two of you could go pick out the exact same ingredients, but you know, you could also go to a car factory and the chef could make something that's Formula One and you'd end up with the jalopy.
You know, it's going to look a little different when it comes comes out of his kitchen than when it comes out of mine. That is for sure. And I think, you know, one of the things that is true, and you go to in Europe, restaurants, especially in France, but it, you know, throughout Europe, you go and there's this, you know, it This isn't just a restaurant because you're hoping to create a chain restaurant out of it. These people that have restaurants there, it's their life, it's their style.
Correct.
It is a profession, yes. And the whole idea is to create that experience every day for people. Some of the people are coming in, you know, every day or every other day because they're in the neighborhood, and other people are coming in once in a lifetime. And that's and the thing about what you have done, and I just want to give you credit for this because I've been going to your restaurant for years.
Thank you.
That you have a. And I didn't even know you guys were coming in today, so this is a rare pleasure for me, because you do something that's so simple and yet so great, and it's just the way. Sometimes you have, like, you're in Europe and you have the best meal of your life, and you're like, how did that happen?
True.
You know, it's so simple and so great.
It's like a simple salad, and sometimes it's just delectable,
right? And here in Chicago, you can find that, and it's reasonable. You know, it's not crazy. It's not
like you mentioned also that. I think we change, you know, the menu four times a year. Mm-hmm. We have a prefix menu that we do every day. Monday, Tuesday, $34, and during the week is $39, which is a good price, you know, for three-course prefix menu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like you say, you know, we go into the market, we cook in, you know, great food, but also we are in the Gold Coast, but it's not so expensive.
Right. I know that's the case.
Yes, if you come to Bistronomy, if you have a glass of wine, if you have a three course prefix menu, and the prefix menu is from the Green Sea market, from the farmer, you will pay most $50-$55 for three courses. It will be $100 for two people.
For sure.
Yeah.
No.
How do you get out of this challenge? Try to
do this in the Gold Coast, it will be difficult for you to do.
And now I know how to say prefix. How do you say it again? Say it one more time.
I'm sorry?
Prefix.
Prefix means, you know, is when you create a menu that has three courses or
right,
four courses.
Right, multiple courses. I just never know how to say it.
And each course could have, you know, choice of three choice or four choice.
Yeah.
Mm. We do three, sometimes four choice.
What are we doing tonight? What's our special tonight?
Mm-hmm. Tonight, wow, we have...
I just want you to tell me about it. Do it slowly. Would you
know, we have special, we have the prefix, but also we have plat du jour, and tonight the plat du jour is a snapper with asparagus risotto.
Mm-hmm.
We have also a veal chop with garlic mashed potatoes. We have a lamb with ratatouille and smoked
eggplant. Okay, I'll take one of those.
Wow.
You know, you ever do that where you give up to the waiter in the middle of the special?
Okay,
you
had me.
Stop right there. Yeah. I don't want to know anything else. Don't confuse me.
Yeah, you had me at the snapper.
Yeah, all right.
Absolutely.
Okay, now you also have a beverage program, as I like to say now, modern.
Oh,
yeah.
You never bring that up?
And we have Eddie Orozco, who's with us, who is the sommelier and man of the spirit. I'm going to just say it like that.
Well, it's like a beverage director at Bistronomic. We try to create cocktails that go well with the food and look for wines that will match the food at the same good quality, like low price, so people can come and enjoy.
And that's the damnedest thing, too. Because you can, listen, I'm an American, I like to buy American and all that, but there are French wines that you think, oh, well, they're going to be really expensive because they're French wines, that blow American wines out of the water, and they are half the price.
Wow.
And it is like, and you just, you know, don't tell Trump because he'll put a tariff or something on it. But it is amazing, too. And you've got a great list. How many wines do you have?
We have like 75 wines. We have a lot of wines from France. Some of them are from America. And we create our own drinks. All of those drinks are like ours. We don't copy from anybody. We just
unique. You just make your own.
Yeah.
They are really simple. It's so easy for everyone to make, and they go really well with the food. And today we got two drinks here for you to taste.
Yeah, what do you got?
Oh, yeah, let's try that.
So we have the Amanda Smoky Day. This is called a Smoky Day because usually when you are at a restaurant.
Let me have it with it. Amanda's Smoky Day.
Amanda is my chef.
I was going to wonder how Amanda got brought into this.
Don't say anything about it. She's my chef.
Okay, all right.
Usually, okay, Amanda.
She's having a smoky day.
Chefs are in a place that is so smoky. Sometimes they are angry. Sometimes they are happy.
Uh-huh.
But this wine is, this cocktail is just smoky and really fun and refreshing.
So this has got the bullet. Is this the rye or the bourbon?
It's the bourbon. Bullet bourbon with a smoked rosemary syrup and orange juice mixed together, and a splash of ginger.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that you are drinking right now, that is a spicy drink.
Yes, I grabbed the wrong one. I just realized that is
this is Amanda.
This is the devil in the body right there. The Diablo Ocor, which is now that's white rum and tarragon syrup and lime juice and cayenne. Wow. And I was going in for this
great
thing, and I realized there's cayenne pepper in there.
Yes. That one is spicy, but if you drink that cocktail with the tuna tartare that we brought over today too. Yes.
The tuna tartare is fantastic.
And after five you don't feel it anymore.
But I'm with you, chef.
When you eat those together, that is a perfect expression of pairing food with alcohol.
Nice.
Oh, it's great. So good.
That's not something I am not familiar
with.
To
this one here with the cayenne.
All right, bistronomic, or bistronomique, as I like to say. But then people, they get mad at me because I'm a dumb American when I try to sound French. Gosh. They go, all right, come on, fancy guy.
You took several years of French, right? Step it up.
I took like 12 years of French, and I can read his menu. That's about as good as it's going to get. I can listen in and sort of figure out what you're saying. I can read it, but I freeze when I'm trying to speak it. It's just as I get totally lost in it.
Do you mind if I try the go right to the dessert? I'm going to try the chocolate hazelnut bar.
Oh, it looks
the Kit Kat.
It's called Kit Kat.
We call it the Kit Kat. My way of Kit Kat.
Uh-huh.
Oh. I love Kit Kat. And
don't
I'm gonna guess right.
don't let the Hershey's people know about
oh
it.
Oh, my all goodness.
Right. Don't, yeah.
Wow.
Please.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
All
right.
And it's served with orange Grand Marnier sauce.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I
want
again.
Him to be the new staff announcer of the radio program right here.
Seriously. The Wokan Show.
Yes. All right. Bistronomic is, you can just go there. Just go there now.
Take anything. Order anything.
840 North Wabash in Chicago, right downtown. Mm. You want a nice downtown day or night. It's
fabulous.
Be better. If you live in the city, this is a great little, it's one of the best kept secrets. I almost am troubled that you're here because I'm telling everybody about
thank
this,
you
but
much.
You are one of the best little hideaway restaurants in Chicago.
And also we are it's not too many restaurants that is owned by a family. Mm. Most of the restaurants in the Gold Coast, they are owned by a corporation.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I don't want to say any name, but
no,
corporation.
You know who you're talking about, yeah.
We maybe one or two restaurants that is owned by a family. Means we are very proud, and I think we're doing a great job every day. It has been 7 years now that we opened.
Congratulations.
If you went into a neighborhood restaurant in Lyon or in Paris,
you
would get the same experience that you're getting in this neighborhood restaurant right in the middle of the Gold Coast. I think that is the most amazing thing. So congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right. And just keep pouring them, Eddie. That's all I'm going to say to you right now.
Well done, Eddie.
Yes. Well, yes. You're my hero. I know there's a lot of heroes, but that's what I mean. All right. Right now, let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the top of the hour? Concho with Anna DeBlanches right here on 720 WGN. All right. Richard Roper is in the studio with us.
Hello.
And all right, you already told us that you like this Deadpool 2. You're giving it 3.5 stars. You also gave us a quick initial review of Solo, A Star Wars Story. You like that. That opens next week, so we can't really... what's the point? What do you like... What do you like this week? Give me the book club. Explain this. Oh, I've seen the commercial for this.
Yeah, you don't like it?
Oh,
see, it's not. You're not the core audience here.
No.
This is not you.
The core audience is dead.
Oh, come on now.
Oh, that's not right. If they did a bunch of old dudes, you guys would say it's good.
They did that. They always do those old dudes movies.
I hate those old dude
movies.
Well,
you know, it looks like and reminds me of all those kind of Nancy Meyers, Nora Ephron movies you'd always get about women of a certain age who have all the money in the world, but usually some sort of romantic setback, right? Our family.
Where the
problems.
House is the star.
Where the house is the star. So the book club, Jane Fonda, Candace Bergen, Diane Keaton, and Mary Steenburgen are four best friends, all of a certain age, very successful.
I could
in
almost
their own
see
ways.
That, actually.
Right?
In real
I mean,
life.
They're wonderful, you know, wonderful icons of the screen. The premise is they have a book club, and one month they decide that they're going to read 50 Shades of Grey. They actually, you know, that's the book that they choose. So let's just play a little clip here where they discuss the book.
Elta's book. I mean, the things Christian does to her. My God. It's absurd.
I could have put him in jail for any one of those things.
But she sure was having fun.
Yes, she was.
It's not like we don't have fun.
No, but it's a different kind of fun.
Very different.
Like this. This is fun.
For sure. I just can't stop thinking about when he snuck her off and he gave it to her right there in the
boathouse, you know?
Oh, the boathouse.
Yeah. Do you think anyone our age still goes, "Bye, beautiful friends"?
Yeah, I think some people do.
You know, you can almost tell from even the music, like that kind of cheesy, hey, we're having fun, you know, bouncy score in the background. And it's a huge disappointment, this film. It just spins its wheels. So the whole idea then is all four of them decide to spice up their respective romantic lives. One of them's a widow. One of them is married, but husband's no longer interested in, you know, the bedroom. So she tries to figure out ways to seduce him. One of them is a judge, Candace Bergen's character, and she decides to go on a dating website. It's all that, all these kind of cheesy, hokey, you know, strange little asides. And like the Diane Keaton character, who, you know, Diane Keaton, the character she plays is smart and vibrant and wonderful. And her two daughters treat her like she's about to go into a home. They keep saying that she can't take care of herself and she shouldn't live on her own. And when they can't find her for 12 hours, they call the police because she's on a date. I mean, it's just so tone deaf. And the 50 Shades of Grey thing is really weird because there are these four intelligent women. If they really... And they're usually reading literature. Mm-hmm. They all would have thrown that book against the wall 20 pages into it. And even weirder, Jane Fonda's love interest is played by Don Johnson. Now, when you have a movie, when you have a movie that references real world things like 50 Shades of Grey, and then Don Johnson shows up, who is the father of Dakota Johnson, who played Anastasia Steele in the movies, it's just weird.
It is kind of weird.
It's weird. It's terrible. It's 1.5 stars. I really just felt bad for these wonderful actresses that there wasn't a better vehicle for them.
Yeah, but Don Johnson is good looking.
He still is. You know what? He's charming. Andy Garcia.
Andy Garcia, it's funny.
The, you know, the men who are the romantic interests now, you know, they're basically playing like the women in this movie. They're the good looking guys who get picked up by the, and Jane Fonda, she's 80 years old. She looks amazing.
Stunning.
They all look great. And they're all, you know, Candace Bergen's coming back with Murphy Brown. Mary Steenburgen, I think, has been wonderful as an actress. And she's married to Craig T. Nelson, you know, in this movie. So it's all these
familiar
people.
You know, Craig T. Nelson works his way into all these movies now. That is the,
happy to do that.
From The Proposal all the way on down.
Yeah. The gruff.
Is it kind of movie where a bunch of women would get together and watch it and just like have some fun? Just
probably.
Sort of like 50 Shades of Grey was a really critically acclaimed
movie. You could have it
movie.
For your movie club. And you could, if this movie were playing on an airplane, but you wouldn't even have to plug in your headphones. You know what was happening.
All right, so these women are all around 70 in their real lives.
Yes.
Right? Somewhere in that vicinity, you know, plus or minus.
That's true.
Right? So wouldn't it be aspirational then for 80-year-olds to want to watch this movie? Because 50-year-olds don't want to watch this and go, oh, is this what I'm heading toward? I don't think that's the way it's going to go.
Well, it's interesting. It's always baffled me that older women seem to be the primary audience for 50 Shades of Grey because it's about a 20-year-old and a bratty, creepy, sadistic billionaire who's like 27. It's not a book about a middle-aged woman or older woman who finds sexual freedom, but they all seem to dig it. I don't know. Maybe it reminded them of their college years in the 70s. Wellesley. I don't know.
That book was credited with spicing up a lot of love lives that have gone a little dormant,
which
sort of spice things up again.
You know, I never got that. First of all, the writing was horrible in that book, but also it's all about a guy who like makes the women sign contracts so that he could then tie them up.
What's wrong with that?
I mean, geez.
All right.
1.5 stars. Okay.
By the way, Jane Fonda has done the worst job. And I love Jane Fonda. And she's done amazing, you know, as an actress. I'm over the Hanoi thing. But the point is that, you know, the work she's done as an actress, there's amazing stuff.
Absolutely.
Especially recently, the newsroom and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. She's a really great character actress. Mm-hmm. The issue we have here, though, is that she's, in promoting this movie, she's talking about how she's closed up shop down there.
Yeah, she has.
Right? And you're like, well, that's not the point. The movie is supposed to be you're open for business.
She sent her last boyfriend packing. 82-year-old whatever. I don't know. God love her.
Ted Turner, whatever it is. Fahrenheit 451, explain this.
Yeah, let's talk about this one. This is actually an HBO movie, and you remember the Ray Bradbury book. Everybody got assigned that. If you remember going to high school or maybe even junior high, and talk about a book that was ahead of its time. He wrote that in 1953. There have been other movies made about it. So they've updated it. It's set in kind of modern, even future times, but it's still about book burning and it's still about censorship. And it's got a terrific cast. Michael Shannon and Michael B. Jordan are the leads in this movie, and Michael Shannon kind of raised Michael B. Jordan, and they're on the fire department. But the fire department in this movie, of course, is the department that gets called anytime anybody has any access to information. They come and literally burn it down, whether it's physical books or even anything on the interweb. And there's a lot of talk in here about fake news and how, you know, information will just clutter your brain. And according to the history that is taught now in this movie, Benjamin Franklin was the first to burn books in America. That's what they claim in this movie, like the government. So it's, you know, it's very timely. I'm giving it a solid 3 stars, mainly because it's a great looking film. You know, the ideas, while provocative, are pretty heavy handed. They always have been in these kind of books like this.
The book is heavy handed.
But Michael Shannon and Michael B. Jordan, you know, Chicago's own Michael Shannon. Of course, Michael B. Jordan played Creed. He's in Black Panther. Those are two really fine actors who really get some, you know, meaty scenes together. So check that out on HBO if you have HBO.
All right. Let's check out Dark Crimes and Always at the Carlisle. But we'll do it on the other side here. Violetta, well, first of all, Judy's going to tell us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour news.
Learn how real Chicagoans live. The day-to-day struggles, successes with health, fitness, and food. Watch Living Healthy, Chicago Sundays at 11:30 on WGN-TV.
All right, Richard Roper is here. He says, book club is 1.5 stars. Don't waste your time. Fahrenheit 451, which is on the HBO. That's worth checking out because it's got Chicago's very own Michael Shannon in it and Michael B. Jordan, who is having a pretty great year at the cinema. And it's a Ray Bradbury book. And now Dark Crimes. This is Jim Carrey's new one.
Yeah, Jim Carrey. I think about once every 3 years now he does a movie. That's by his choice because he wants to do his painting and is going off into the mountains and is all that kind of mystic stuff and just living his life. This is an interesting movie. He plays a Polish detective who is investigating a brutal murder that occurred near a sex club in Poland. A very dark movie called Dark Crimes and very explicit in its treatment of the crimes itself. And Jim Carrey's almost unrecognizable. This is one of those movies where it's set in Poland, but everybody just speaks English with a Polish accent, you know, make it easier on
us. Jim Carrey?
Including Jim Carrey. And he's completely believable. If you did not know it was Jim Carrey with a big bushy beard and the Polish accent, you'd just think it was some Eastern European actor who's won many awards. You know, he's very good.
It's great skilled.
Very good. I can't recommend the film. I'm giving it 2 stars. It's interesting because this is actually based on a New Yorker article about a true story in which an author's work of fiction described a crime in such detail that mirrored an actual crime and had detail that only the authorities knew. Author eventually got convicted of the crime and actually committed the murder that he had fictionalized in a book. It's based on that. Jim Carrey pursues this author who he believes has done the same thing. It was basically, you know, published a novel that incriminates him. And it's very interesting to see how that goes. But it's just, I got to say, it's just a grisly film and so dark. And the treatment of the female characters, you know, there's a moment in the movie where, like, we get it. This is what the evil people did to these women. But it feels as if the film was exploiting it by showing it in such detail. It kind of takes you out of the film. You're like, those are real women who are actresses who are obviously in a safe environment. But they're really being demeaned on some level. The depiction of it is really just, it feels gratuitous at some point. Yeah. So
I want to get to this last. So did you give a star?
2 stars.
2 stars. And that's in the theater.
Yes. And I think on demand as well.
All right. Always at the Carlisle. We got about a minute left.
Yeah, no problem.
Tell me about this.
Yeah, this cool documentary about the Carlisle, this famous hotel in New York City where everybody has stayed. John F. Kennedy supposedly trysted with Marilyn Monroe there, the royals through the years, presidents. And it's really cool because they got every celebrity you could think of who has stayed at the Carlisle talking about it, because it's a place where they've never talked about what happens at the Carlisle. It's supposed to be very discreet. It's sort of shabby chic. So you got everybody from George Clooney to John Hamm talking about their experiences at the Carlisle and Jack Nicholson staying there and what happened this one night in the 70s. So if you're into that kind of thing, just very late escapist documentary about a really kind of legendary hotel. Check out Always at the Carlisle.
Where does one find that?
That one, I believe you can get on demand. You should be able to, you know, if you do, you search your on demand menu. You know,
okay,
it should
so
be
it's
there.
On demand. I because now it's very confusing. I don't have to go to Netflix. I don't have to. What do
no,
I have to do?
I believe it's just a video on demand. Like if you, it would just be like
so
if you
go
got
to
a
my
Comcast
iTunes,
or
my Apple thing,
all that stuff.
Thing.
Yep.
I don't even know.
Probably playing
you
at one or two.
I'm like my, ask I'm like your my, daughter to help you.
Just
I'm
type
like
in
my
mother
always.
Now.
I don't know. I did. Why does the key have to go in the lock?
If you type in hallways, you'll get a Holly Hunter movie, and then you'll get this one.
My grandfather actually lived at the Carlisle in New York.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew you'd have a connection.
That's not surprising.
Fantastic. I've got a, that's an interesting.
Did he see anything with JFK? And
maybe pictures of him on the wall and some of the scenes in the background here. Then.
Interesting little story right there, I'm sure. Yeah, he was an interesting chap. I don't know. The apple didn't fall far twice from the tree.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Thank you very much. Sure. We have got Judy Pilot coming your way in 2 minutes with